written in very matter-of-fact, straightforward language. A simple accounting of resources and outcome. The city of Salinae and its surrounding districts have been eliminated. One sentence. And I was, once again, standing in the dead remnants of Salinae. The dust, the toxic mist, the fucking smell. The way Rain's voice had wavered when he held that street sign. This is Salinae. And now, here on my father's desk was this brief, one-page report, outlining so dryly how he had destroyed my homeland, murdered any family I'd had left, lied to me about it. "You weren't going to tell me," I'd spat at him.
"You are not like them,"
he'd snarled at me. The parchment quivered in my hands. I put it down quickly, pushing it to the back of the pile. As I did, I glimpsed a faint silver glint. I pushed aside an open tome. Buried beneath it was a tiny, crudely made dagger. A lump rose in my throat. I had made this not long after I'd come into Vincent's care. It was the first time I'd felt comfortable enough to ask for a project to work on, and safe enough to actually do it. I'd liked chipping away at stone. I didn't even remember why now. But I did remember making this little dagger, and the pit of nervousness in my stomach when I'd presented it to him. I had held my breath when he surveyed it, face stoic.
"Good,"
he had said after a long moment, and he'd tucked it into his pocket, and that had been that. The first of countless times I'd found myself reaching for Vincent's approval and wondering desperately whether I'd gotten it. And now here it was, lying with the death warrants of thousands. Two versions of him that I couldn't reconcile in life, and now was even further from understanding in his death. Vincent the King, who would kill my whole family in the name of power, who would slaughter an entire race, who would lie to me for nearly 20 years about my blood to protect his crown. And Vincent the Father, who kept this little makeshift trinket I'd made him, right there with all his most precious possessions, who had told me he loved me with his final breaths. How convenient it would be if I found a letter tucked away in one of these drawers.
"My little serpent," it would read. "If you're reading this, then I am gone. It would be unfair for me to leave you with no answers."
But Vincent was not the kind of man who wrote down his secrets. Maybe I'd told myself I was coming here for supplies, but really, I was coming here for answers. A fucking dream. But instead, this was a room that made as little sense as he did. I found nothing here but discarded pieces of him, just as disparate in death as they were in life. My eyes burned. My chest ached. A sob bubbled up inside of me with such violence that I had to press my hand over my mouth to stifle it. I never used to cry. Now it seemed like the more I tried to stop myself, the more viciously it clawed its way out of me. I choked it down with an ugly sound that I was grateful no one could hear. "No fucking time for this, Aurea," I told myself. "This isn't what you're here for." My gaze fell to the center of the desk, the pile of broken glass. That was peculiar. It was mirrored. The shards neatly stacked on top of each other, as if someone had assembled them into a perfectly aligned pile. The metal reminded me of the full moon, silver bright and gleaming with hammered indents that shivered beneath the cold light. Elegant swirls adorned its smooth edge, driving to the center before being interrupted by the jagged edge. I squinted and could make out a faint cast in those carved lines. Red-black. Blood? Why would he keep this broken trinket here, right in the middle of his work? I touched the edge of the top shard. A gasp ripped through me. The edge was razor sharp. It sliced open my fingertip, leaving a streak of red rolling to the edge. But I barely noticed either the cut or the pain, because the shards began to move. In the span of a blink, the shards of glass spread out, locking into place with each other, forming a shallow, mirrored bowl, the drops of my blood rolling down to be cradled in its center. And yet, as shocking as this was, what left me staggering was the sudden, overwhelming, disorienting sense of Vincent. Vincent, as he'd been in this room, standing where I stood, blood spilling into the same bowl. A sudden intense anxiety rose in my throat, all in broken pieces, fragmented through the cities, generals, Sivrinage, Salinae, hundreds of feathered wings staked throughout the city walls. Anger and possession and determination, but beneath it all, a powerful fear. I yanked my hand away, gasping. I felt nauseous, dizzy.
Vincent? I thought I'd imagined the voice at first. Vincent? Highness?
The voice was faint and distorted, as if coming from somewhere very, very far away and through heavy winds. But even so, I recognized it.
Jasmine? I whispered.
I peered into the bowl again. My blood pooled there, spreading out more than such a small quantity of liquid should have, coating the silver. I squinted and leaned closer. The flickering reflection of the night flame made it hard to see, but was something moving?
Aurea?
The voice, confused, was definitely Jasmine's. I could barely hear her. I was now bent over the desk, my forearms braced, my awareness pulled in so many directions, to the faint presence of Jasmine, somewhere many miles away, to the presence of Vincent in the past. This was a communication tool of some kind. A spell, a... Voices. Not Jasmine's. No, these were here, in the hallway outside. One was Rain's. Fuck. I yanked my hand away from the device, and the silver collapsed back into countless shards, falling again into a neat pile. I winced at the metallic sound they made crashing against the wood. I swept them up and shoved them into my pocket, my eyes glued to the door. The two voices grew closer. The other, I realized a few seconds later, was Kairos's.
Long to find it, Kairos was saying.
Footsteps down the other staircase, my escape route.
Has the guard gone through all this yet?
Rain asked.
Not yet. He made a lot of changes to the place.
There was a strange note to his voice at that. One that seemed obvious to me, but that Kairos breezed right by.
They'll start in on these rooms as soon as they're done with the upstairs studies,
Kairos said.
Anything useful?
Nothing new. We already know who we need to kill. The hard part is getting to them. But getting rid of Misrata will help with that. Septimus seems confident.
Well, as long as Septimus is confident.
Rain's voice dripped with sarcasm.
At least that will get some of them out of our way.
The footsteps grew louder. I shrank back as I watched the sliver of light beneath the door, watched shadows flicker across it. I stopped breathing. I shrank back against the wall, trying to put as much space between me and them as I could. But they just kept walking.
This place was kept out of the way,
Kairos said.
Maybe he kept the good shit down. What?
My short-lived breath of relief stilled. One set of footsteps, Rain's, had stopped.
What is it?
Kairos said again.
Nothing. Just curiosity.
Rain was a good actor. He always sold his lies well.
You go ahead,
he said to Kairos.
I'd like to look around in here instead first.
Fuck. Fuck.
You want me to call someone to help you? Honestly, I'm dying for a little privacy. Want to hear myself think for once.
Kairos chuckled, and I glanced frantically around the office. The only hiding place was under the desk. A comically terrible choice. Still, it was better than nothing. As I ducked down beneath the desk, I caught one final glimpse of all my father's work. Papers and diagrams that showed exactly how much he loved his kingdom. and how much of his blood and sweat he poured into building and protecting his empire. His empire, my empire. And here I was, cowering under a fucking desk. A sudden agonizing wave of shame swallowed me as I slid beneath the wood. Just as one set of footsteps faded away, and the other drew closer. Just as the door swung open, and a familiar voice said, "Did you really think I wouldn't smell you, princess?" Chapter 6. Araya. Fuck. I looked around for something, anything I could use as a weapon. That would be too easy, apparently.
"Are you going to come out from under that?"
Rain asked.
"Or are you going to make me get you?"
My jaw clenched so hard it shook. Suddenly, I felt just like I had in the Moon Palace, when he had taunted me in the greenhouse. I was cornered then, and I was cornered now. I rose and turned to face him. My hands curled at my sides. I wished I didn't see the flicker of disappointment in Rain's eyes at my concession. He leaned against the doorframe, surveying me, that brief reveal disappearing beneath the smirk at his mouth. His performance resumed. I said nothing.
"I know you're very good at sneaking around places you aren't supposed to be,"
he went on.
"Should I feel lucky you don't have your blades on you this time?"
He touched his thigh, calling back the first time we had met, when he'd grabbed me in an attempt to save my life, and I'd thanked him for it by driving my dagger into his leg. What did he think he was doing here? Playing with me like nothing had changed between us, like we were still just two contestants in the Qajari, reluctant allies. My voice was hard and sharp. "Somewhere I'm not supposed to be? This is my home." I was never very good at seeming cold and collected when my emotions were thrashing under the surface of my skin. Vincent had reminded me of it often. Rain saw the truth. His smirk disappeared.
"I know that," he said.
No hint of teasing this time. "No, you don't," I shot back. "You don't understand that because you're keeping me a prisoner here."
"You're not a prisoner. You're
my queen," he always said. Bullshit. I couldn't stand it anymore. "Stop," I snapped. Just stop. Stop with the lies. Stop with the willful ignorance. You lock me in my room every night. You sleep in the next apartment so you can guard me." Rain moved abruptly, two steps forward so he was up against the other side of the desk, leaning close to me.
"I am trying to keep you alive, Araya," he said, voice low. "And it's hard fucking work, all right? I know none of it is ideal, but I'm trying."
I wanted to say, "So what? Let it happen. If it's so hard to stop it, let them kill me."
"You're better than that, little serpent,"
Vincent whispered in my ear. "How benevolent of you," I shot back. "How selfless." Rain's palms now pressed to the table as he looked directly into my eyes.
"Do you think I want any of this?" he spat. "Do you think I want to listen to you sob every night?"
The blood drained from my face. At my expression, his mouth thinned. I could practically hear him silently scolding himself for saying it. I knew there was a possibility that he heard me. I knew that Rain had always seen everything I didn't want him to. But fuck. To hear it acknowledged? It violated some unspoken contract. My cheeks warmed. I took a step back, suddenly desperate to put more space between us, and Rain matched it forward. His gaze was steady and unblinking, as inescapable as if he'd grabbed me and pinned me to the wall.
"I made you an offer,"
he murmured.
"The night we..."
A stutter to his voice. I heard what he didn't say. "The night we were married." Neither of us ever acknowledged that. Our marriage.
"I made you an offer that night, and it still stands. It always will."
Another step back. Another step closer.
"I hate this place."
He exhaled the words, ragged, like he'd torn them from deep in his chest.
I hate these people. I hate this castle. I hate this fucking crown. But I don't hate you, Araya. Not even a little.
His face softened, and I so wanted to tear my eyes away, and didn't.
I failed you. I know that. I'm probably still...
He shook his head a little, as if to shut himself up.
But you and I are the same. There is no one I would rather have help me build a new version of this kingdom. And honestly, I don't know if I can do it without you.
I finally allowed my gaze to fall from Rain's face. Allowed it to drift down to the desk between us, scattered with Vincent's notes and plans. Rain now leaned over that desk, his palms pressed down on those papers, all evidence of my father's kingdom and how much he had loved it. My father's kingdom. My kingdom. The faint pulse of my air mark over my throat and chest burned stronger now, itched like an acid bite.
At least that will get some of them out of our way.
Rain had said, so fucking casually, when talking about the people who now relied on me. You don't want Ahiyaj's help, I spat. You're too busy killing all of us.
Us?
Rain's scoff was immediate, vicious, like he couldn't even stop himself.
When the hell did it become us? They never treated you like you were one of them. They treated people like you like fucking livestock. They disrespected you.
You killed my father! The words burst out of me. The accusation, the ugly truth had been pressing up beneath the underside of my skin for weeks. Every time I looked at Rain, they screamed in my ears. All those accusations. You killed my father. You lied to me. You used me. You killed my father. They drowned out every word he said to me. They silenced him immediately, and then hung there between us, palpable and cutting as razor blades. You killed my father. I didn't even realize I was speaking aloud this time, the words scraping from between my clenched teeth. With each word, I relived it. Rain's magic flaring as he pinned Vincent to the wall. Vincent's body, falling, nothing more than a pile of broken flesh. Silvery smoke unfurled around my clenched fists. My shoulders rose and fell heavily. My chest hurt. Goddess, my chest hurt. So much. I'd let out too much, and now I struggled to wrangle it all back under control. For a long, horrible, silent moment, I was so sure I was going to fall apart. Rain at last moved around that desk, approaching me slowly, watching me so steadily, I could feel it even when I squeezed my eyes shut. Like he was waiting. Like he was ready.
I am so sorry, Araya,
he murmured.
I'm so sorry that it all happened this way. I'm so sorry.
The worst part was, I couldn't even doubt that he meant it. Sorry. I remembered the first time Rain had apologized to me plainly, like it had been a simple truth. And how it had meant so much to me that it rearranged my entire world a little to hear it spoken that way. I'd felt like I had been given a gift I had been waiting so long for someone to validate my feelings that way, to concede to me even at the expense of their own pride. I'd been so desperate to hear those words from my father. I'd finally gotten them in his final breaths.
I love you. I'm sorry.
And did they change anything? Did they mean anything in the end? What fucking good did a few words do? I opened my eyes and met Rain's. His face was so starkly honest, so raw that it startled me. I could see that he was opening a door for me, coaxing me through, ready to take my hand and guide me there. But you'd do it again, I said. I slammed that door shut. He flinched.
I am trying to save so many lives, he said. Helplessly, like he didn't know what else to tell me. Well, what else was he going to tell me but the truth? I fucking hated that I understood that, in some dark corner of myself. Rain had made a bargain he had died trying to avoid fulfilling. Rain had thousands of people relying on him. Rain had his obligations tattooed onto his flesh. But I'd been denying for too long that I had my own obligations seared into my skin, too. And I'd just listened to Rain talk about killing the people who now relied on me. Talk of a new kingdom was one thing, but it was talk. Because I'd just watched him put on a performance to gain the favor of the very same people who abused him. Fucking hypocrite. We wanted to talk about hard decisions? Rain took another step closer. Araya, listen. But I jerked backwards. I want to go back to my room. It was impossible to miss the disappointment in his eyes. Take me back, or let me walk there myself, I spat. To his credit, he knew when there was no arguing with me. He didn't say another word as he opened the door and walked silently a step behind me, all the way back to my room. Chapter 7. Araya. I wasn't sure when I decided what I was going to do, only that by the time I made it back to my room, it was no longer a question. I waited until long after Rain's footsteps had faded down the hallway. I didn't want to take any risks, especially not when Rain had made it so clear just how embarrassingly well he could hear what went on inside my chambers. And then, finally, I reached into my pocket and withdrew that little clump of glass, placing it on my bed. It looked just as unremarkable in here as it had on Vincent's desk, like stacked shards, now stained with my blood. I still didn't understand what it was or how it worked, but I mimicked what I'd done in the study, sliding the still bleeding pad of my thumb over the smooth edge. Just as it had before, the shards immediately scattered into a pile of broken glass. I touched them again, and it reassembled into the mirrored shallow bowl. Now that I was watching more closely, I noticed that the pieces, when assembled, still trembled a bit. In some areas, they didn't seem to line up quite right. I sliced my thumb on the edge again and watched my blood swirl down the decorative whorls, pooling at the bottom of the basin. I was prepared this time for the wave of Vincent that would follow. But it wasn't any less painful to feel it, nor any less difficult to keep myself from shutting it out. I didn't hear the sound of his voice or see his face, but I unmistakably felt his presence. Like at any moment, I'd turn around and he would be standing behind me. Deeper, more visceral certainty than any single sense could conjure. The blood at the center sputtered and widened, shivering at the edges with the trembling shards of glass. The image in the blood seemed like a reflection from another location, distant and faint. Maybe it would have been easier to see in a pool of black blood. Or perhaps it was so faint because this device, whatever it was never intended to work for me. I was only half vampire, after all. I squinted into the half-formed image. I could make out the faintest suggestion of a person's face, as if leaning over the mirror from the opposite side. "Jasmine?" I whispered. "Highness?" It was unmistakably Jasmine's voice, just like I'd thought before, albeit very distant and fuzzy. I leaned closer, straining my ears. "It is you," she said. "Thought from the... Where are... Slow down," I said. "I can't hear you."
"Just as I always told you, little serpent," Vincent whispered to me. "You must learn how to be more patient. Wait and feel it."
I drew in a sharp breath. Goddess, his voice felt so close, I could practically feel his breath on my ear. The sudden wave of grief struck me before I could steel myself against it. Jasmine's image solidified, her voice growing stronger, even though I still had to strain to hear her.
You can use it,
she was saying. I could make out her expression now. Confused, intrigued. Dirt or blood appeared to smear one of her cheeks. Her hair pulled back in a frizzy knot. A bandage wrapped around one of her arms. A stark difference from the polished seductress I was so used to seeing slink around Vincent's parties. Use it? I asked.
His mirror. You can use it.
His?
I didn't need to know the details of what this thing was exactly, to know that it was powerful. Old magic. Just from the way it felt, so inextricably linked to Vincent's soul.
And if this was his, and it ran on his blood.
We don't have time, I muttered mostly to myself.
No, I didn't have time to question any of this. Not when we had work to do. Jasmine nodded seriously, her face shifting from that of a curious subject to a general.
Are you safe, Highness?
Safe. What a word. But I answered, I am. And your status?
We are in...
I don't want to know. I was relatively certain that if we'd made it this far, no one was listening to our conversation, but I couldn't be sure. Understanding fell over Jasmine's face.
Yes, Highness, how much do you know of the state of the war?
I cleared my throat. It was embarrassing to admit just how little I knew. Now, with this connection to Vincent burning bright and painful in my chest, it seemed even more shameful. I had been handed incredible responsibility, and how I felt about it made no difference. So far, I'd squandered it. Jasmine's image flickered, and I pulled the bowl closer to me, as if to drag her back by force. I want your assessment, not the Rishon's, I said. A convenient way of brushing off my own ignorance.
We've lost many of our remaining strongholds. We're still fighting to defend those that remain, Highness. Fighting with all we've got, but...
A wrinkle of hatred flitted over her nose.
The Bloodborne are numerous and vicious. The Rishon we could handle. The Bloodborne are... challenging.
That aligned with what I'd been seeing here. Rain could wax philosophical about his dreams all he wanted. The ugly truth was that he had invited dogs into his kingdom and let them hide behind his crown while they murdered his own people. He was heavily reliant upon their forces. Rain had told me once that dreams counted for little. What counted was action. Well, his actions were not enough, and mine had been severely lacking too. Jasmine's face blurred again, her next words fractured.
Do you... orders?
In a desperate attempt to save my connection to her, I pressed my thumb to the edge of the bowl and let more blood flow into it. But that just made her image ripple and made the headache at the back of my skull pound ferociously. The sound of distant footsteps made me still. I peered over my shoulder at the door to my chambers. Closed. The footsteps didn't approach, then faded to an echo at the opposite end of the hall. I turned back to the mirror.
I don't have much time, I whispered. Do you have orders? She asked urgently.
Orders? Like I had any authority to be telling Jasmine what she should be doing.
They're coming after you at Misrata in 2 weeks, I said, quickly and quietly. It will be a big move. They're stretching themselves thin, even the Bloodborne. They'll be leaving the Sivirnaj Armory unmanned in order to get enough forces there.
Jasmine's brow furrowed in thought.
I don't know if we could defend against that kind of manpower.
I don't know if you could either, but maybe you don't have to. I hesitated here, standing on the precipice of a decision I couldn't take back. The decision to fight. I could feel Vincent's presence like a hand resting on my shoulder.
This is your kingdom, he whispered to me. I taught you how to fight for a significant existence. I gave you teeth. Now use them.
Evacuate Misrata, I said. Go after the armory while it's unguarded. Raid it or capture it or destroy it. Whatever is possible with what you have. Do you have the resources?
Even through the foggy reflection, the steel in Jasmine's stare was clear.
It will be tight, but we have enough to try, I didn't let myself waver. Didn't let my command falter as I said, then do it. Enough running, enough defending. We don't have time for half measures. It was time to fucking fight.
Part 2. New Moon. Interlude. There's nothing more dangerous than a bargain. No greater horrors than those you choose. No worse fate than the one you beg for. The man does not understand this yet. There was little, actually, the man understands, though he doesn't know that yet either. He came from a small life in a small town, and spent most of his time trying to run from it. Of his limited options, he chose the one that gave him the most freedom. He loves freedom, the feeling of the sea wind through his hair. He loves it tonight as his ship travels through the treacherous waters near Obitres. They call it Nyaxia's Hook, that little curved strip of land, given its name because it so often snagged unwitting human sailors like helpless fish on a line. The night is dark, the water is rough, the sky is stormy. The sailors do not have a chance. Most of them are killed immediately when the ship, too small for such a perilous journey, smashes upon the unforgiving rocks of Nyaxia's beckoning hand. They drown in the salty seas, bodies broken over the rocks or impaled on the remains of their own ship. But this man, despite his unremarkable upbringing, knows one thing above all. He knows how to fight. He is 32 years old. He is not ready to die. His body has been mercilessly shattered in the violent impact of the ship. Still, he swims to shore, muscles straining against the churn of the surf. He drags himself onto the beach. When barely conscious, he forces his head up to look at the sight ahead of him, the silhouette of a city the likes of which he had never seen before, all ivory curves and moon-cold light. He thinks he has never witnessed anything so beautiful. The man is so close to death that night. The gods love to take credit for fate. Is it fate that saves him? Or is it the fickle hand of luck, rolling dice that land in just the right way? If it is the gods' hands at work, then they are laughing to themselves tonight. He crawls as far as he can, one inch after another, the sand beneath his hands turning to rock, then soil. He can feel death following him. He can feel it bubbling in his every bloody breath. The man once thought himself brave. But no mortal is brave in the face of an untimely death. Death would have taken him if fate or luck had not saved him, or damned him. The king happens across him at just the right moment. The king was in the habit of collecting souls, and the young man's soul is exactly the kind he enjoys. He flips over the half-conscious man, assessing his beaten but well-formed face. Then he kneels beside him and asks him a question that the man will spend the rest of an endless life replaying. Do you want to live? The man thinks, what a stupid question. Of course he wants to live. He is young. He has a family waiting for him back home. He has decades ahead of him. No mortal is brave in the face of an untimely death. The man's answer is a plea. Yes, please. Yes, help me. Later he will hate himself for this, for begging so pathetically for his own damnation. The king smiles and lowers his mouth to the dying man's throat. Chapter 8. Rain. From the first moment I'd seen Septimus, I'd hated him. I'd known exactly who he was, and even if I didn't know him by reputation, his appearance, which screamed untrustworthy blood-borne royalty in every way, would have given it away quickly. When he'd sidled up to me during the Kajari, I'd wanted nothing to do with him. But he was like a virus or an unpleasant odor. The fucker just kept coming back. It was casual enough at first. He would linger too long wherever Misha and I happened to be in the days immediately preceding the Qajari. In the beginning, I'd thought he was doing what most bloodborne nobles did during the tournament, taking advantage of the fact that they were actually allowed to interact with the other houses and figuring out where they could exert their influence. Easy enough to dismiss. But then, maybe the third or fourth time he cornered me, I began to get suspicious. And I'd already decided I didn't like him by the time he had pulled me aside and told me, "I know who you are." That was enough to spook me. I'd ripped apart my own inner circle trying to find out how he knew. Still to this day, I didn't know how he had found out. But that was when the pressure began. "You can't do this by yourself. The Rishan aren't strong enough. Doesn't matter if you win. You'll need help. Let me help you. Let us help each other." I told him to go fuck himself. I never considered taking the deal. I'd learned a long, long time ago the danger of someone offering you everything you've ever wanted. But then he noticed Araya. And I still remembered the exact moment I knew he understood he could use her against me. That moment at the Half Moon Ball, when he'd called her by Nessunin's name. I denied him right up until the end. Right up until he was dangling Araya's life in front of me. And then I broke. When you've lived through certain things, you know how to recognize someone who's desperate. Septimus, I knew, was desperate, in a dangerous kind of way. The kind he was very good at keeping far away from the surface. He'd do absolutely anything to get what he wanted. And what scared me was I still wasn't entirely sure what that was. Desperation made for a terrible deal. This thought was at the forefront of my mind as I sat in my office with him and Vale listening to Septimus tell us oh so casually about how he couldn't send bloodborne troops to Misrata after all. Vale was not happy. He wasn't bothering to hide exactly how not happy he was. "That's unacceptable," he said. Septimus's stupid fucking face arranged into that stupid fucking smirk. "I understand why you feel that way," he said. "But the nature of the matter is what it is. I can't bend time and space, sadly. Desdemona confirmed it multiple times. We just can't get the forces there in time. We'll have to make the move later." "So let me make sure I understand," Vale leaned across the desk. "We now have to reschedule an operation that we've had planned for weeks on account of your shit general's poor foresight. With a day's notice?" Septimus's smirk faltered. I'd noticed that he was perfectly happy to accept whatever insults you wanted to lob his way, but he didn't like it much when you disrespected those who worked under him. He let out a puff of smoke through his nostrils. "My shit generals are doing most of the work putting down this little rebellion of yours. Maybe if your own forces were willing to fight for you, it would have been handled faster." Vale looked like he was close to blows. Against my better instincts, I shot him a warning glance. Vale held that stare for a moment, fought it, because even after these last weeks, he still wasn't really ready to accept me as his superior, before shaking his head and leaning back in his chair. "This is what I did not miss about this job," he muttered, as if he couldn't help himself. "Working with incompetence." Septimus chuckled, then his gaze slid to me. "You're terribly quiet, Highness." I had indeed been quiet. I'd been watching Septimus, thinking about this suspiciously neat little last-minute rescheduling of his. There was more to it than he was saying. I had no doubts there, even if I didn't know how or why. I'd been so busy thinking that I'd neglected my role. I wanted Septimus to keep on dismissing me as the brutish turned king. Let him keep thinking I was someone he could take advantage of. My returning smile was more of a baring of teeth. What would you like me to say? Septimus shrugged as if to say, you tell me. Do you want me to bitch at you for your poor planning or your carelessness? Again, he shrugged. If you wish. Why would I waste my breath? I already wasted enough of it planning this offensive with you. Maybe I don't feel like giving you any more of my time. He cocked his head, staring me down a little too thoughtfully for my comfort. I sat up straighter. I don't see what else there is to talk about. I waved my hand at him dismissively. I have actual work to do, if you're done. A brief, cold smile as Septimus rose. Quite done. It was now baffling to me that the first time I'd laid eyes on Sivrnaj's skyline, I'd thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. I'd thought it looked like nothing less than salvation. What a fucking joke. That view had looked a lot like this one from the roof of the armory on the outskirts of the city. It had been night then, too, the city drenched in moonlight. I supposed there was a certain architectural appeal to it, all those domes and towers and spires, marble and ivory and silver. The kind of thing you could only admire until you'd seen firsthand the blood that had been spilled to build it, and the rot that festered underneath. You shouldn't be out here, Highness, Vale said for the fourth time in the last 15 minutes. The words didn't change, but his tone did, growing increasingly frustrated. I heard you the first time. He let out a grunt of wordless disapproval. I turned around, taking in the rest of the landscape. The armory was located right where the city limits gave way to the desert, smooth rolling dunes to the north, rocky inclines down to the sea to the south. It was a foggy, overcast night, which I didn't like. Poor visibility to the ocean, poor visibility above. I glanced over the rail to the city streets below. To the west were the human districts, blocky patches of tan and gray. Just beyond them, the slums of the vampire territories of the city. A few haphazard barriers, clumsy constructions of wood and stone, still remained in some of the streets. The remnants of the Hyaja's attempts in the days after the coup to claw back some sections of the city. Failed attempts, but they'd put up a fight. And I never forgot that they were still fighting. It was a quiet night now, but these kinds of things always happened on quiet nights. It had been a quiet night when the Moon Palace was attacked. It had been a quiet night before Neculi's kingdom fell. And it was especially quiet here now, given that Septimus had pulled away his blood-borne forces, leaving the Rishan here to guard the armory, scattered and disorganized due to a last-minute change in orders. Nothing was supposed to happen tonight, thanks to Septimus's decision. But I just thought about Septimus, and that little fucking smirk, and his very casual change of plans. People, especially nightborn and shadowborn nobles, were far too quick to dismiss the bloodborn as mindless beasts. They were bloodthirsty bastards, but they were smarter than anyone gave them credit for. If they weren't hobbled by the curse which cut down their numbers and their lifespans, I had no doubts they could have overtaken Obatres. Hell, maybe the world. It was upper-class arrogance to underestimate them. And I didn't have the luxury of that. I want more guards here, I told Vale. A lesser general would have told me I was being overly cautious, but Vale, to his credit, didn't question me. What do you suspect? He asked quietly. I don't know. Damn my pride, but I wasn't about to say those words aloud, especially not to Vale. It was the truth, though. I didn't have a concrete theory. I didn't think Septimus would openly turn against us, at least not yet. He'd locked himself into this alliance, too. He'd have to work harder at getting out of it than this. But sometimes there's just something in the air. I sniffed and shot Vale a wry smirk. You smell that?
What?
Blood. I leaned back against the stone wall, my hands in my pockets. I'll stay here tonight, but pull whoever we can spare from their posts throughout the rest of the city. Put them here. A pause. I could tell that he wanted to call me stupid for staying here personally, even if, especially if, I suspected something might happen. But he just said, "As you wish, Highness." And without another argument, he spread his silver wings and launched into the sky with a whoosh. I lifted my chin and stared after him as he disappeared into the soupy mists. I settled at the stone lip of the wall and unsheathed my sword. It had been a while, but there was a comforting familiarity to the way my muscles had to move to wield it. I lay the blade over my lap, taking in the dark steel, the faint red smoke rolling from the blade. I knew it by heart, like an old friend. I almost wanted something to go wrong tonight. Give me something to kill. I missed it. It was simple, easy, straightforward. The opposite of these last few weeks. At least, it used to be. The memory of Vincent's face in his final moments flitted across my mind, unwelcome. Nothing simple about that. I pushed that thought away, leaning back and watching the thick clouds drift across the sky, waiting for something, even if I didn't know what. Let them come. I was looking forward to it.
Chapter 9. Araya. I knew something was wrong before the explosion hit. I was no stranger to gazing longingly out this bedchamber window. An entire life locked in this room had that effect. But these last couple of weeks, I'd been doing more than gazing. I'd been waiting. Waiting for a mass exodus of Bloodborne and Rishon soldiers. Waiting for a mass exodus that didn't come. The Bloodborne left a few days ago, and though it wasn't quite the scale of movement that I'd been expecting by the way I'd heard them talking, it was enough to keep me hopeful. I'd thought the Rishon would be following tonight. But hours passed, and the Rishon didn't move. A knot of unease tightened in my stomach as I watched and waited, growing with every passing minute. I tried to use the mirror again, this time to warn Jasmine, but was met with nothing but misty clouds in my pool of blood. Apparently, she'd already moved. The attack was already underway. Soon, I was pacing the length of the windows, eyes glued to the armory in the distance, mind racing. Jasmine was a strong, competent general, I told myself. She wouldn't have moved unless she had verified that she had a path to success. And the conditions of that night were ideal. Cloudy to hide Hiage flying in the skies. Many of the Bloodborne had left. That was something. It just wasn't the skeleton force that I'd been expecting. Unless I'd missed something. But Vincent whispered in my ear, "You know better, little serpent, than to be willfully ignorant." No, he was right. I stopped at the window, fingertips pressed to the glass. Something had changed. The Bloodborne that had pulled out certainly wouldn't be enough to take a city like Misrata. And the explosion wiped away all my thoughts. It was loud, so powerful I felt it in the pads of my fingers against the glass, even from across the city. A burst of shimmery smoke erupted from the distant armory in a plume of white and blue. I watched, breathless, as the flare of light burst then dimmed. I hadn't seen anything quite like it since the attack on the Moon Palace, many months ago. Jasmine, fucking brilliant. Petty, but brilliant. She'd used magic wielders to recreate the destruction of the Moon Palace, creating a violent distraction. I didn't blink as distant silhouettes plummeted through the clouds and smoke, countless Hiage diving down into the wreckage. The sight chilled me down to my bones. I needed to get down there. I needed to get down there right now. The explosion had triggered an eruption of activity in the halls beyond my chamber. I ran to my door and leaned against it, listening to the frantic sounds of distant running footsteps and shouting voices. Then I pounded at the oak, so hard my fist began to ache. Whoever was on the other side took a long time to open it, like they weren't sure whether it was a good idea. A young Rishon man with wavy blonde hair and a look of general bewilderment on his face stood there, looking as if he was immediately regretting his decision. I blinked. "You aren't Keturah." When I had a guard, it was most often her.
No, he said. I'm Killan.
If Keturah wasn't here, that meant that she had been pulled away somewhere else. Perhaps she was already at the armory. Shit. Let me through, I said, already moving. But Killan clumsily blocked my path. I craned my head to see several more soldiers donning armor rushing down the hall. I am your queen, I snarled. Let me pass. Let's see if all Rain's "you aren't a prisoner, you're a queen" bullshit actually meant anything.
I can't do that, Highness, Killan said. I've been instructed to guard you. It's dangerous out there.
I've been instructed to guard you, the boy said, like I didn't see his nostrils flaring when I got too close. He wasn't equipped to guard anything. He didn't even know how to resist the smell of human blood. If this was all that was left in this castle, that meant they were really desperate. I took a step backwards. Two. Killan loosened a visible exhale of relief.
Remember who you are, Vincent whispered.
What the hell was I doing, asking this boy for permission to leave, letting him think he could guard me? I'd won the goddess-damned Qajari. I'd won battles against vampire warriors twice my size and 10 times my age. I was the daughter of Vincent of the Nightborn, the greatest king to rule the House of Night, and I was his rightful heir, and I was better than this. Mother, I had missed anger. I embraced it now like welcoming an old lover back into my arms. Nightfire roared to my fingertips and tore up my forearms. It wasn't hard to deal with Killan. The boy had probably never even hit another living thing with that sword, and he certainly wasn't prepared for me to be the first. The touch of Nightfire had him gasping in pain, bloodless wounds opening over his arms where I grabbed him and flung him against the wall. He tried to fight back, weakly, but I knocked his sword from his grasp, sending it clanging to the marble floor. It felt so good to fight again, so good I wanted him to push back harder. I wanted more of a challenge. I wanted to hurt a little. But Killan didn't offer much of a fight. No, he just panted, his heart beating fast. Mother, how could I hear that heartbeat so clearly? As I pressed my forearm to his throat, Nightfire nibbling at his skin. My foot reached to the left and dragged his sword back. I reached down to grab it, and Killan tried to slip my grasp. Useless. Seconds and I had him back against the wall, this time with his own sword poised at his chest. He looked so afraid. That used to bring me a lot of satisfaction, to see them afraid. A few brief moments where they felt the kind of powerless I had felt my entire life. For a moment, I felt satisfaction in it now, too.
If it feels this good to have one person look at you this way, little serpent, Vincent murmured, imagine how good it feels to see a kingdom look at you like this.
A shiver ran up my spine. A person could lose themselves in that kind of power. And I wanted to, as long as it made me feel something other than weak. But the uncomfortable truth was that Killan was not one of my targets in the human slums. Killan was barely more than a child, tasked with a job he wasn't ready for.
Kill him, Vincent insisted. He will tell the others you're gone.
Voices down the hall. Distant footsteps. Fuck, no time. I lifted my sword arm. Please, Killan begged. Smack. I slammed his head against the wall. His body went limp. He was bigger than me and physically stronger, but he hadn't been expecting that. It was difficult to knock out a vampire. He wouldn't be unconscious for long. I dragged him into my bedroom and locked it behind me. All 3 clicks. The footsteps were growing closer. The castle seemed to have come alive with anxiety. Distant shouts rang out, harsh with command. I only had a few minutes, if that. I grabbed Killan's sword and his hooded military cloak, and I ran. I'd have given anything in this moment for wings. Even if I did have the stamina to sprint across Sivrnaj, a ridiculous thought, it still would have taken far too long to make it to the armory on foot. I needed a horse. Horseback travel wasn't especially common in the House of Night, given that wings were often much more efficient. They were typically only used by humans or by the Nightborne Guard, which meant I had to sneak my way down to the stables. Kalan's cloak was a shit disguise when anyone could smell my human blood, but it was better than nothing. It was only thanks to the utter chaos in the castle that I'd managed to make it to the ground floor undetected. Uniformed figures ranging in rank from Nightborne Guard members to common foot soldiers, barely more than servants, flooded the halls. It was easy enough to lose myself in this, slipping all the way down to the stables. A number of horses had been tacked and lined up, and I grabbed the first one I saw, a little chestnut mare. I briefly considered the possibility of trying to blend in, but I didn't have the luxury of time. The minute anyone saw my face or got close enough to smell me, they'd know exactly who I was. Worse, as I hoisted myself onto the horse and leaned down to adjust my cloak, I glimpsed my chest and cursed. My mark. I was wearing a camisole, not my usual leathers, which left my upper chest exposed. The cloak covered some of the red ink, but not all of it. Fine. Speed it was. My horse was uncomfortable, as if sensing that it was being separated from its herd for unsavory purposes. Horses in Obitrace tended to be especially flighty creatures. This one danced anxiously as I urged it from the stable doors, ducking my head to hide beneath my hood. The heat of the night, arid and thick, startled me. It took me a moment to realize that it was probably because I hadn't even been outside in weeks. Rain's words from one of our first meetings now rang through my head. Vincent's little princess, locked up in her glass castle, where everyone can look but never touch. What a fucking hypocrite.
Hey, you boy, where are you supposed to be?
A gruff voice startled me. I urged my horse into a trot onto the city streets, tugging my hood higher.
Boy,
the voice called again. But I kicked my horse into a canter, leaving his shouts behind me. The human districts. I knew those streets better than any vampires did. I could cut through and make it to the other end of the city faster through roads that weren't congested with soldiers and checkpoints. I dug my heels in, the canter becoming a gallop as we swung down a quiet, dark side street. But just around the corner, the beast abruptly spooked, rearing back and nearly sending me tumbling to the cobblestones. I barely managed to right myself, rubbing the mare's neck and uttering hushed comforts. It was so dark that at first, my feeble human eyesight couldn't make out the figure in front of me. But then, they stepped closer, hands raised. A ray of moonlight fell across the swoop of his hair, silver, and the curve of a nonchalant smile.
"Didn't mean to spook you," he said.
"My evening stroll got a bit chaotic."
Septimus, fuck. I inclined my head, hiding it farther beneath the shadow of my hood. Would it matter, though, to vampire eyesight? To vampire smell?
"Apologies," he said. "You have important things to do, don't you? I think it's that way, though. All kinds of barricades down this road."
I nodded, still struggling to keep my face hidden. Septimus tucked one hand into his pocket and brushed past me, patting my horse's shoulder as he did.
"Good luck out there. Looks like some nasty business."
I released an exhale as he passed, unwilling to question my luck even if I had the time to. Maybe he'd dismissed me, or maybe he'd recognized me. Even if he had, I couldn't let myself stop to think too hard about what that meant. I had a task and a clear road ahead of me. I kicked my horse back into a canter. I took the left path. The attack was a near-perfect mimicry of the attack on the Moon Palace. I had to admire Jasmine's commitment to her pettiness. As far as she knew, Rain had been responsible for the Moon Palace attack. To her, this would be justice. And Mother, she was damned good at her job. It was amazing what she'd managed to execute. It felt like I was galloping into the underworld itself. Nightfire smoke had a very particular smell, one that seemed to burn your nostrils from the inside out. The stench of it was overpowering by the time I crossed the second bridge from the human districts back into the vampire territories of Sivrenage. I was at the outskirts of the city at this point, and as soon as I turned the corner to the first main road leading to the base, I cursed to myself. The scene before me was one of pure carnage. The searing white of night fire stung my eyes. It consumed most of the armory. It seemed that Jasmine had decided, probably wisely, that retaking and holding the base was impossible so close to the heart of Sivrenage, so destroying it would have to do. But they were far from unopposed. Rishan's soldiers surrounded me, casters fighting back the flames, warriors charging into the bloodshed. On the roof, barely visible through the night fire light, warriors tangled. I jerked my horse backwards as a bloody, mangled Hiage body landed at its feet with a sickening wet thump. I stared down at him. He blinked at me. His face was covered in blood, shapeless in a way that implied most of his bones had been broken. A brief flicker of recognition sparked in his eyes, and his mouth opened, but no sound came out. For a horrible moment, I was looking at my father's body, mangled just like this one, trying to speak to me in his final moments, and failing. My head snapped up as a distant scream rang out, the kind that set the hairs upright on the back of my neck. I recognized that sound immediately. It was the same sound that had pierced the air during the Moon Palace attack. Demons. Jasmine had gotten her hands on a summoner. My horse had heard that scream too, and it was extremely uninterested in going anywhere near it. It reared up in a violent, sudden lurch, then bucked, and I had to throw myself off its back as it bolted back into the darkened streets of the city. I let out a barrage of grunts as I rolled against the cobblestones. I cursed and pushed myself up to my feet, groping around until I found Killan's sword again. It was a clumsy, unremarkable weapon. I didn't like fighting with traditional swords. They were big and awkward and didn't move as fast as I did. But something pointy was something pointy. I staggered to my feet and set my sights on the burning armory. The doors had been blown open. An entire quarter of the building was simply missing. Jasmine would be inside. My soldiers would be inside. I was running into the flames before I gave myself time to think about it.
Chapter 10. Rain. I fucking knew it. If there wasn't so much death all around me, I might have reveled in that a bit more. As it was hard to appreciate my sense of superiority. I was lucky I made it through the explosion alive. Many Rishan warriors hadn't. Someone had managed to breach the armory walls and plant sigils, apparently, because the explosion came before the Hiage or the demons did. I was walking through the halls when it happened, and I felt it a second before the night fire split the air. You smell that? Blood. Well, I certainly smelled it now. It was the first sense that came back to me as I regained consciousness after the explosion. Then I pushed myself up and staggered into hell. Nightfire everywhere, silhouettes of Hiage and Rishan soldiers alike running through the blaze. Nightborn demons, four-legged, hairless beasts darted through the flames at impossible speeds. A distant wail rang out as they clamped their teeth around some unlucky soldier hauls away. They were identical to the ones that had been planted at the Moon Palace all those months ago. An intentional choice, I was sure. All of it. The night fire, the demons. A deliberate, downright, artful imitation of that night. Jasmine's little fuck you for the attack I'd refused to confess to. Was it terrible that I was a little relieved? I wasn't the best king. Not even an especially good general like Vale with his affinity for strategy and politics. But I was a fucking incredible warrior. Really, really good at killing things. It was comforting to sink back into something familiar as I cut my way through the carnage. Ever since Nekulai's death, I'd felt his power, the power of the Rishan airline, pulsing deep beneath my skin. I'd always been relatively strong since I'd turned, but when he died, If the mark wasn't enough to tell me what I was, I would have been able to feel it, like a new spring of power inching to the surface. For a couple of centuries, I'd done my best to ignore it. I didn't want to accept what I was. Nekulai's fingerprints were already all over me. He'd made me everything that I was. I didn't want my power to become his, too. But ever since Nyaxia's gift, ever since she restored the full power of the Rishon airline, there was no more ignoring it. I'd felt it from that first night after I carried an unconscious Araya back to the castle and returned to help retake the city. I'd felt it when I'd ripped Marta's head off his body, and I felt it now with every asterisk-laced swing of my blade, power spilling from my pores with such magnitude that I couldn't have hidden it even if I still wanted to. I hated how much I loved it. I turned a corner and cut through another demon. Easy enough, but wherever I killed one, more were ready to charge from the smoke. Above, I could hear voices and footsteps, Hiage warriors who had dived down from the cloudy sky, taking advantage of the poor visibility. Closer, Vale's voice rang out through the halls, commanding our soldiers to push them back before they could make it to the ground floors. It was almost funny just how many stars aligned to make this night a perfect deadlock. If we'd pulled our forces like we'd originally planned, the Hiage would have taken over easily. If the Rishon nobles had sent support like they were supposed to, we would have outnumbered our attackers. If the Bloodborne were still stationed here, then we would have crushed the Hiage before their assault could even begin. But as it stood, we were matched 1-1. Our soldiers were healthier, but the Hiage were more skilled, and they had the benefit of surprise and the demons on their side. I passed several corpses on my way downstairs, people who were so evenly matched in their respective battles that they'd killed each other instead of finding a victor. I hit the bottom floor. I needed to get to the back, close the gates. I turned a corner and stopped short. I recognized her immediately, even through the smoke. The Nightfire seemed to bow to her, warping around her body as if conscious of every curve and angle. Tendrils of long black hair flew out behind her. She was fighting with a sword, a shitty one which she was clearly uncomfortable with, and I knew that right away because I knew her and how she moved and how she fought. Knew her so well that all it took was one split second to know when she was off balance. She was fighting a wayward demon, which let out a keening wail as she impaled it, releasing a putrid spray of black blood. With a strangled roar, she pushed its limp body away from her, then turned around and lifted her head. Those fucking eyes. Silver as steel, just as sharp, just as deadly. Every time I felt that little pulse in my chest, the urge to rub the scar that didn't exist. Her face went hard and cold, and for a split second I was so relieved to see that look. Fight. There she is. That one moment of relief drowned out all the other reasonable thoughts, the thoughts I was supposed to be having, and those hit me in an avalanche soon after. She got out. She came here. She knew to come here. She was trying to escape, or she was responsible for this. She leapt away as soon as she saw me, taking a few strides backwards. The night flame around her surged and danced, clinging to her form. I wondered if she knew that it did that. Was it conscious, or just a new part of her like my magic was? "Let me pass," she said. A command, not a request. I smiled a little. "Or what? You'll stab me again? For what, the third time now?" The night flame flared again, curling around her body. I should have hated that Araya had gotten a burst of power of her own from her ascension to air, but damn if I didn't love to see it. Just like I loved to see the strength in her stare as she gritted her teeth and stepped closer. "I'm not fucking around, Rain. Let me go." "I can't do that, Araya."
"Why?"
It was shockingly earnest, a wrinkle between her brows and everything. She took another small step, gaze never leaving mine. It was a throwing knife of a word, already drenched in her blood.
"Why?"
It struck me harder than it should have. It was a bigger question, I knew. We both knew, than the single word. Bigger than two people in this hallway. It was a why did you betray me question, spoken with the same devastating tone as when she'd hurled the reality at me in Vincent's wing. You killed my father. I could practically see the accusation in her eyes. No, more than that, an observation. Because like always, she saw right through me. Why? Because if I let you go, I'm committing treason against my own throne. Because if I let you go, I'll have no choice but to fight against you out there. Because if I let you go, you become my enemy in earnest. And I can't kill you, Princess. I've tried. I can't. Too many damned words, too much honesty. I settled for, you know why, Aurea. I'm not done with you. A sliver of the truth mixed with the goad. Come on, fight me. I wanted her to fight. I'd missed seeing that in her. I'd been begging her for this for weeks. I raised my sword. She did the same. The nightfire danced with her every breath, rising with the hatred in her face. Then her gaze rose. Eyes widened. I glanced over my shoulder just in time to see a lithe female form with outstretched featherless wings rushing towards me, sword drawn. Jessamine, you don't forget the face of someone who spent hours torturing you. I barely dodged her attack, countering, our weapons clashing together. She'd drawn blood, her blade slicing open my left shoulder where I'd been a little too slow to dodge. A stupid mistake. She moved like a dancer, well-trained, elegant, unemotional. Her expression was focused, calm as the surface of a winter pond beneath the marks of battle. Dirt, blood, scorched burns. She glanced at Aurea, and I made the mistake of doing so too, a stupid distraction at a critical moment. Jessamine's next strike was to kill. Stop! Aurea's voice cut through the steel and chaos. Stand down! Jessamine's face contorted in confusion. Aurea stepped closer, a sneer at her lip. He's mine, Jessamine. Stand down. Get to the others. I wouldn't hurt Aurea, but I had none of the same affection for Jessamine. When she hesitated, baffled by her queen's order, I seized the opportunity. I could barely even regulate the new depths of my power now. I didn't even have to call the asterisk before it danced at the edge of my blade. Jessamine was good enough to dodge despite her distraction, good enough to barely redirect the swing of my blade with hers, but the force of it sent her flying across the hall, her body crumpling in the ruined stone. She'd barely fallen before Aurea was on me. I felt her coming because of the nightfire, that telltale buzz in the air a split second before she ran at me. I could have killed her. Could have turned just enough to levy a blast of asterisk strong enough to pull her flesh from her bones. Instead, I had to take that extra precious moment just to make sure I'd reeled it in, holding myself back before I blocked her. It put us on equal footing, and Aurea seized on that opening. It had been weeks now since she'd fought, but if that break in practice hurt her, she didn't show it. If anything, the pent-up energy seemed to fuel her every strike. Still, so much was the same. We fell into our steps like a well-practiced dance. The intensity of every move turned up double, triple what it was months ago. Our magic, her nightfire, and my asterisk surrounded us like thickening clouds, light and darkness, heat and cold. Every strike I blocked reverberated through my entire body despite Aurea's small size. She threw that much force into each one. And she was quick. Forcing me to strain to keep up with her. She was so good. I honestly couldn't help but admire it. And yet neither of us drew blood. The nightfire collecting around her sword did its work on me, yes, but each of her lunges were half measures, making shallow cuts if they got past my blocks. Still, she was fast, too fast. Faster with each blow, like she was letting go, losing control. The nightfire grew brighter and brighter. Three strikes, the last one so fast I couldn't dodge it, pain snaking across my chest, a line from my shoulder to my hip. If she thought I didn't see the little flinch across her face when she saw the blood, like it jerked her out of her haze, she was wrong. I used that hesitation against her, countering before she could move, reversing our positions. She was against the wall, her sword barely holding mine back, my body pinning her against the stone. The night fire was so bright now I couldn't see anything but her face. It was all her. Deadly and stunning. Even her hatred was fucking beautiful. We remained there, locked together, both panting. Just like it had been in the Qajari. Like fighting a mirror. "You're holding back," she said. A throb in my chest, in the ghost of a wound that didn't exist. I smiled. "So are you," I said, completing our script. I leaned closer, close enough that my lips almost touched her ear,